Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Oklahoma legislature will convene on Monday for the start of its 2014 session. The big issue facing legislators will undoubtedly be how to apportion about $170 million less than last year to agencies ranging from education to healthcare that say increases are absolutely necessary to maintain their current level of services. Well, joining us today to talk about the upcoming session is David Blatt, the Executive Director of the Oklahoma Policy Institute. OK Policy, as it's known, is a nonpartisan independent think tank whose mission is devoted to the responsible funding of public services and expanded opportunity for all Oklahomans. So as Governor Mary Fallon prepares for her State of the State address, today we'll examine the challenges that lie ahead for legislators during the upcoming session. David Blatt is my guest today. David Blatt, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
The Oklahoma legislature will be getting underway here in the next week or so, and it's been a busy off-session time with lots of interim studies and really a situation where the state has more revenue coming into it, but less to appropriate. And in fact, $170 million less. I think a lot of people are hearing that. They hear that revenues are up, but less money being spent. Why is that?
Well, some of it just has to do with the peculiarities of the budget process. But I do think that as we look ahead to the next legislative session, I think the fact that we are looking at shortfalls next year, it may ultimately be somewhat less than $170 million. I think that there's some easy ways to try to get that number down. And then in February, they will do a new certification and come up with some new numbers. And I think many people are hopeful that there won't be such a big gap to deal with. But at the same time, there's very little chance that there's going to be much in the way of new money. So it does create a bit of a paradox. How is it if Oklahoma's economy is generally doing well and the nation is seeing growth? We saw good numbers this week on fourth quarter growth. How is it that we're facing shortfalls? And one of the biggest reasons is that we are sending a lot of money now to the energy industry for these tax rebates that they accrued, and we're paying back over $100 million a year. The tax break for horizontal drilling, we're now looking at $250 million for this year and next. So that is having a real impact. We're spending more money off the top on roads and other things. But the bottom line is that as we look out to the real challenges that the state faces to provide adequate funding for prisons and education and health care, the money isn't there. So what are we going to do?
Now, before we move to those areas, let's talk about who wins from these sort of off-the-top appropriations that don't go through the appropriation process. You mentioned the tax credits for horizontal drilling and unconventional energy recovery. That's grown, and of course, that's a big source of debate, and we'll get into that in a moment. But what else? I mean, you said bridges and roads. Are we taking money off the top to fund road construction and bridge reconstruction?
What we've done over the last several years is pursued an aggressive effort to try to make up for a lot of the maintenance needs that had accumulated over a long period of time. So we created a roads fund where the first dollars from income tax revenues are deposited into this fund for road maintenance and repairs. There's a very small amount for public transportation, and that amount increases every year. So right now, I think we're looking at somewhere around $350 million, and that will go up by another $40 to $60 million next year without the legislature making any decisions. So when you have $40 to $60 million growth towards the roads fund in a situation where other tax collections are flat or declining, that puts a greater squeeze on other areas of state government.
And then it sounds like the legislature is abdicating their duty to actually vote on where they're going to spend the money as well. I mean, you may well decide that roads and bridges need that much, but it should be a decision every year, shouldn't it?
We should be making that decision each year. And instead, what they did was put automatic increases, sort of an automatic trigger that it goes up by an additional $48 million, say. It may be a little bit more or less than that this year. But I think that is a debate worth having for next year. If we know that our prisons are at 99% capacity but less than 70% staffing, if we know that we are facing really dramatic cuts for mental health and Medicaid, if we know that education budget has been going down, then is it appropriate to be increasing transportation next year and increasing it by so much? So it really is a question of how do you juggle different priorities, and essentially we've put into place where sort of autopilot is making these decisions, at least as far as transportation is concerned.
Now, as we mentioned earlier, as of now, the state equalization board says we'll have about $170 million less to appropriate this year over last year. And yet, chairmen of authorities and the various agencies have been going before committees of the legislature and saying, not only do we, you know, we don't have anything to cut, we need more money to maintain the status quo. I'm looking at the Oklahoma Healthcare Authority, $144 million to maintain current level of care. The Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse, about $21 million plus to maintain the same level. Corrections needs $45 million. Education needs $81 million. I mean, how are legislators reacting to this news, given the fact they're going to have less to appropriate and at least the majority want to do a tax cut this year?
I think legislators are putting their hands over their heads and feeling a major headache coming on. The fact is we never fully recovered out of the last downturn. If you adjust the budget for inflation, this year's budget is about $500 million less than what it was 5 years ago. So we were just really digging ourselves out of the hole. So if you take education, money that is appropriated to common education through the state aid formula to fund the basic operations of schools, that's still $200 million down from where it was 5 years ago. And we see that with fewer teachers and larger class sizes and the elimination of key courses and lots of other things. So the idea that we're now entering into another round of potential cuts is really worrisome. You mentioned the two healthcare agencies. I attended a legislative committee hearing last week where Commissioner Terry White of the Mental Health Department, Nico Gomez of the State Medicaid Agency, presented their agency's situations. And because of a variety of factors, rising enrollment, rising health care costs, declining federal matching support, they do need substantial amounts of additional money, or else they are going to be in a situation where they're going to have to cut key services. And Commissioner White laid out what could be on the table, and it is alternatives to incarceration for those with mental health and substance abuse issues. It is our best practice, nationally recognized system of care program. It is suicide prevention efforts. These would be devastating for the most vulnerable segments of our population. So we're really going to have to look carefully at what can we do in order to put more revenues into the game next session. And there are things we can do.
Nico Gomez was saying his message was, well, for their clients, basically they're going to have to rely on the emergency room more.
Right. And how is that actually saving us any money? If you look at what are some optional Medicaid benefits, they include prescription drugs, kidney dialysis machines, durable medical equipment. These are short-term, short-sighted savings that very quickly are going to cost us more because you're going to have more people seeking care in the emergency room or nursing homes.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned a federal declining support. Is that a result of Obamacare because of how health care is funded through the federal government, through Medicaid? Is it a difference in payments?
Or? This is a long-standing issue with the Medicaid program where Medicaid is a shared state-federal program. The state puts up a portion of the cost and the federal government puts up a matching amount based on a formula that is determined above all by state personal income. Oklahoma's personal income has been growing faster than most other states in recent years, which means that our federal share, known as an FMAP, has been going down. This year, we're taking a particularly major hit. So the federal share is going from something like 63 cents of every dollar down to 61 cents. When you talk about a multi-billion dollar program, federal share declines 2 percentage points, that adds up quickly. There's at least $50 million, and I'm starting to hear larger numbers. That greatly affects the Medicaid agency, but also the Department of Mental Health, also the Department of Human Services that run programs that have Medicaid support. So that's where, when we're saying we're seeing a loss of federal support, that's really where it is. It's due to a formula that gets set.
We kind of talked a little bit about where the needs for more money is in a time when there'll be less money in the state legislature. I do want to mention one thing about corrections. You mentioned the fact that we're 70% staffing. There was just a statistic here in the last day or so, which the head of the corrections said, we're seeing turnover of one-third of the workforce every year.
It's a completely drastic situation that just can't continue the way it is.
And I think Superintendent Keith Ballard in recent days was also talking about the exodus of teachers from the state. This is where this funding hit is really occurring.
Absolutely. We've gone years without raises. If you look at the corrections department, we dug in on some of the numbers looking at staffing and the inmate population. And, you know, we have more people in our penitentiaries. That number keeps going up. And there's a lot that needs to be done there, too. We really need to address over-incarceration and look at ways to be sending less people to prison. We have some really promising diversion programs, which you can do with probation and parole. So that needs to be part of the equation. But at the same time, our inmate population is going up, and our staffing has declined by over 500 correctional officers in the last 5 years. So you have situations where the ratio has reached truly dangerous proportions, and correction officers are working those 60-hour shifts, and yet still many of them, their families are on food stamps because of how little they earn. We are either last or second last in the nation as to what a correction officer makes.
Well, now that we're all thoroughly depressed, is there any good news in this budget cycle and for the legislature?
Well, not so much good news as opportunities and options to take some action. So without question, this escalating tax credit for horizontal drilling, where we tax, you mentioned unconventional production. Traditionally, this has been very unconventional production, but now it's
conventional.
Entirely conventional. Most wells being drilled in Oklahoma and really across the nation are being drilled horizontally. And yet we tax that production at only 1% for the first 48 months. And that now has grown to be a $250 million tax break. And if we don't do something about it, that $250 is going to rise to $300 and $400 and $600 million very, very quickly, because that's where the production's coming from. If we move to curb that and bring the taxation of horizontal wells in line with what we've been taxing traditional vertical wells forever, which is 7%, then we can go a good part of the way to getting our budget back into balance.
Now, how does that affect us competitively via Texas, Louisiana, North Dakota, and the other big oil boom states right now?
It doesn't affect us at all for a couple of reasons. One is there's just very little research that suggests that state tax credits are driving production decisions. Companies are going where there are reserves, where there's a workforce, where there's access to markets. In all of those ways, Oklahoma is going to continue to be an attractive, profitable place to drill, so long as the price remains at a good level, which is what we're seeing now. The other thing is, even if you imagine that state taxes and tax breaks make a difference, Oklahoma would remain competitive. With our tax rate would be less than Texas, less than North Dakota for oil, even if we did away with this. Oklahoma now has among the most generous incentives and the lowest tax rates of any state. So there really should be no worry that if we did equalize things and taxed 7% across the board, that suddenly the rigs are going to pull up stakes and move somewhere else.
Is there any sense that the leadership of the state, who's been adamant against changing anything, is changing their song on that?
This is a real battle that is playing out within the Republican leadership. The Finance Secretary, Preston Dorflinger, has been fairly outspoken in saying this is a big problem and we need to do something, and it doesn't make sense to keep in place a tax break that was enacted when...
As an experiment.
Right. When horizontal drilling was new, risky, especially expensive. So he's been very clear. The Treasurer, Ken Miller, has also indicated that the time is very ripe for change. At the same time, you have House Speaker T.W. Shannon made a very strong statement a month ago that he supports maintaining that tax break and not doing anything about that. And of course, he's going to be involved in a primary battle. We don't know, you know, what the effect will be. So there's no question that it's going to be a somewhat heated conversation, but there are folks on both sides. I think also within the energy industry itself, you have segments that are pushing really hard to keep the perks that they're enjoying, but others that are saying, hey, wait a second, you know, yes, we care about low taxes, but we also care about good public schools for our kids, about safe communities, about health care, and their understanding that, you know, the Oklahoma energy industry is not going to thrive if we don't have a skilled workforce and good roads and healthy communities and the other things that, that you need.
Well, another area, which is, again, a big ground of contention, is whether to accept Medicaid expansion. Now, the leadership has ruled on that. Governor Fallon says we're not going to expand Medicaid. But, you know, that's $500 million a year coming into the economy every year. And, you know, in a few years, you'll have a $50 million outlay. First of all, it takes care of a lot of health care issues in the state. It reduces the uninsured. And just that much federal money is a good thing for the state because it's going to get spread around.
Sure. There's the question of Oklahomans are going to be paying tax dollars to Washington for health care. The question is, are we going to be spending Oklahoma dollars to provide coverage for Kansans and New Yorkers and Californians and people in New Mexico, or are we going to use it to provide coverage here in Oklahoma? We know that with this federal dollars, it's going to be 100% of the cost for the next couple of years. If you're looking at the Department of Mental Health, where they face a $20 million shortfall, right now we are covering a whole lot of low-income adults with mental health issues, with addiction issues. We're using 100% state dollars. We could substitute 100% federal dollars to provide that population with mental health services and comprehensive health services in an instant if the state were to reconsider. We know that the governor and Republican leaders have said that they don't want to accept federal dollars, mostly because it's just, it comes from the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, and they're still intent on showing maximum opposition to Obamacare. But at the same time, we have seen Republican governors in other states accept the federal dollars, and we are seeing rates of uninsured go down more quickly in those states. There are some governors that initially have said no that are now looking at it again. Virginia, that has seen the governor's office change hands, is looking seriously. So I think this is an ongoing debate whether or not the severity of the budget problems facing the Medicaid agency will accelerate that discussion in Oklahoma remains to be seen.
Arkansas sort of made a compromise where they're accepting the Medicaid expansion, but they're doing it in their own way with private right. insurers. Is there any chance that Oklahoma might consider that?
Absolutely. Last spring, there was a national consulting firm, the Levitt Group, came to Oklahoma and made some recommendations. And their suggestion was that we do look at what Arkansas is doing. And Oklahoma really has a great mechanism in place with Insure Oklahoma. What Arkansas is doing is saying instead of enrolling people in the traditional Medicaid program, use those federal dollars to subsidize the purchase of commercial private insurance. That's what we're already doing with Insure Oklahoma. It's a successful private-public partnership. But the problem with Insure Oklahoma is it's very limited. It's capped at 25 to 30,000 people. We can use those new federal dollars 100% and then down to 90%, get a great federal match, and use that to expand Insure Oklahoma so that we would take that low-income uninsured population. Half of all working-age adults in Oklahoma with incomes below the poverty level are without health insurance. That has a huge toll for people's health, for people's financial security, for our economic competitiveness when people get sick and can't work. So we have a great opportunity here, and the Arkansas model and the Insure Oklahoma example here in Oklahoma presents a way forward.
And increasingly for our overall health care, because hospitals are going to start feeling the pinch because we're in the midst of changing how they're reimbursed.
Right. So one of the things the Affordable Care Act did do is say that now that we're going to have a greater number of people insured either on the health insurance exchanges or through the Medicaid expansion that these longstanding payments known as DSH payments, disproportionate share hospital payments, are going to be reduced and ultimately go away. And this creates a very worrisome scenario for hospitals that, on the one hand, their DSH payments are going to decline, but they may not have that newly insured population from the Medicaid expansion, so they could be losing in both ways. There's a lot of complicated issues affecting hospitals, but there are certainly lots of hospitals in the state that are in financially fragile situations for whom, if we don't expand coverage, their future becomes very much uncertain.
Let's take our conversation in our last few minutes outside of the budget issues. And what are some of the things you're hearing from the legislature as far as new laws or new initiatives? I mean, given the fact there's very little money, I think that's going to be the primary focus this session. But there's always somebody with a bill. And I know in the past years it's been to eliminate what some would call unnecessary spending. There's a proposal that has been introduced to eliminate funding for the State Arts Council over about 4 years. There's generally efforts against OETA and a lot of other sort of commissions and smaller state things that some people consider not essential. And you know, and there may be a debate about some of that too.
I think those ideas will be back. You point to a couple of areas that some argue are non-essential functions of government, supporting the arts through the Oklahoma Arts Council, maintaining a statewide public television program through OETA. Those proposals have been introduced and have moved partway through the process in the last couple of years, and the pushback has been very fierce from the arts community that talks about the important investments that small amounts of state funding. These two agencies are each a few million dollars a year. Compare that to Medicaid, which is over $1 billion, or common education, which is a couple billion. So it's a few million dollars, but they can show what impact funding for the arts have and how that's statewide, little communities all the way up to Tulsa and Oklahoma City. Same with OETA. For those of us in urban centers with cable, OETA might be something of a luxury among various other choices. But in small town Oklahoma, many places, they don't have a lot of cable choices. And folks are very loyal, very fond of OETA and its programming of news and arts and the Antique Roadshow and all these great things. And the line that keeps getting raised is, why are you trying to take Big Bird away from us? And in fact, when those bills have come up for debate, they have been defeated. My guess is that OETA and the Arts Council will continue to be protected, but their funding has been cut, just like the funding has been cut all across the state. And so we do see, you know, less capacity to do those things that that those agencies are trying to do.
One area of study during the interim period, was pension benefits for state employees. Do you see any signs that there will be a bill introduced this year?
At this point, we know that public pensions is going to be a major issue this session, but there's not a real clear sense of what's going to happen. Traditionally, state employees, we have various pension systems, one for public employees, one for teachers, a couple for law enforcement and firefighters. And state employees do continue to enjoy the traditional defined benefit pension plan, where once you retire every year, you will get a pension benefit based on your years of service and final income and so on. For a long time, Oklahoma's pension systems were in financially dire straits. The teacher system in particular had some major problems. In recent years, we've taken some really strong measures to right the ship and get it sailing in the right direction. And we have seen our financial situation of the pension plans doing much, much better now. There is, however, a strong effort to say that public employees should not have better pensions than private sector workers. The argument against that is that public employees tend to be compensated less. They get less in the way of salary, and the pensions, a good secure pension, makes up for the less salary that you get as a teacher, as a state nurse, as a state attorney, and so on. So there is an effort to do away with the pensions. We're going to be looking at whether this really would help the state's finances or actually hurt it further, whether it would be more expensive to convert to a retirement savings 401k type system. But this is an issue that public employees care very much about, particularly when they've gone so many years without any kind of raise and are seeing their salaries fall so far behind.
My guest today is David Blatt, the executive director of the Oklahoma Policy Institute. As we look ahead to the legislature, what's the thing you think most people are not talking about or hearing about that could happen during this legislative session?
I think one issue for sure that we're going to hear more about over the next 4 months is the third grade retention law. The legislature a couple years ago built on previous efforts to improve third grade literacy, the Reading Sufficiency Act, to become one of the few states in the nation to say that third graders who do not demonstrate adequate proficiency, who are unsatisfactory in reading, will be held back. And those who haven't passed the test or are not eligible for an exemption after this year will be held back in third grade. There are at least 10-12% of students based on previous year's tests that are likely at risk. One group that is particularly at risk are students with individual education plans, IEP, special education students, most of whom are special ed because of learning disabilities. And we anticipate that as many as half the third graders with learning disabilities will be held back this year. There is an exemption for students with IEPs, but you only qualify for the exemption if you've already been held back once and had 2 years of intensive remediation. So if a child has been struggling and they may have received some services, we haven't really done a good job. It's one of these things where the goal of the act is right on target. We do need to make sure that all kids are reading at grade level by third grade. We have a good goal, but we haven't put the funding in to make sure that the additional
services and the structure right. to help make sure that happens.
Yeah. Right. So there are some good programs around the state. My wife happens to be a elementary reading instructor, and she's involved in a great program in Broken Arrow Public Schools. But statewide, we're spending $7 million a year on this, which is a fraction of what would be needed. So this is, in our view, a train wreck that is moving fast along the tracks. And I think that there's going to be a real battle this session to see whether we continue to let that law take effect and potentially face many thousands of third graders being held back next year, or whether they pull back on the switch, hit the brakes and say, maybe we need to put this off for a while, get a better sense of what the implications would be, and hopefully put more resources into ensuring that all kids are able to get to where they need to be by the end of third grade.
Well, it'll be a very interesting session. David Blatt, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
The executive director of the Oklahoma Policy Institute, David Blatt, speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa about the upcoming Oklahoma legislature session, which gets underway Monday with a State of the State address by Governor Mary Fallon. We'll have live coverage Monday at about 12:30. If you'd like to learn more about the Oklahoma Policy Institute, you can see them on the web at okpolicy.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent broadcasts, they're available online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.